This episode of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast is presented by Empirica. That's Empirica, E-M-P-I-R-I-K-A. Empirica exists to amplify your brand's growth, a digital partner to the ambitious, the creative engine launching brands and igniting growth, the unagency where relationships matter, not transactions. Let's connect at empiricamedia.com. That's empiricamedia.com. Let's get the show started.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Gugat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
This is episode 4 of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. This is Mike Gugat. Hey, Poobah, are you certified to be teaching physical education online?
I'm not certified, but my grandson and I seem to be having a lot of fun almost every day at about 3:30 with PE with Poobah, as you saw the video that I sent around to both JP and you. It's a lot of fun.
I've never done Zumba, but is that Zumba?
It's Poobah. Just doing some exercises, having some fun. And, taking up 30 minutes of Ashton's time so his mom can do a few things also.
It's all about burning out the kids so they don't, seems like a lot of frustrated parents trying to do a lot of Zoom education and having a beer with their kids all day.
So it's got to be rough on parents.
Right? Yeah, I can only imagine.
I guess, am I supposed to fill in this blank air then?
You're the only other parent on this group aside from me, so go for it.
Holden's not. I'm lucky to be co-parenting, so I'll put it that way. But hey, JP, we have a great guest on this episode. Tell the listeners about.
Yeah, guys. So we had a really fascinating discussion with Curtis Christofferson, who is the founder and CEO of Innovative Fitness. It's a 12 location gym franchise out of Vancouver. And I think when you listen to the episode, especially his 5 P's of marketing or whatever it was just fascinating to hear how he pivoted his business in literally under 5 days. So stay tuned and check out the interview from Curtis.
That's good. So Neil, you're not just the data guy, you're the marketing guy. Are you going to correct John on the 4 P's of marketing?
No, I will not. Although isn't it 4 P's and a D, as I remember correctly, from Marketing 101 back at Syracuse University? Price, so, product, promotion, and physical distribution. That's 3 P's and a D. I better work on my counting.
Oh my gosh, this just discredited this podcast. All right, let's move on. But first and foremost, JP, how are you all holding up cross town?
It's great. It's good. I think Karina is sick of me. I am not sick of her, but it's all good. It's only love over here. What about yourself, Mike?
We're hanging in there. I spent 3 hours at the grocery store this morning and did my best not to curse out the customer service at Whole Foods, but managed to get enough beer and wine to last us a few days. How about you, Poobah?
It's been a slog. There's no question about it. If it weren't for my wife, Jean, though, I'd be going absolutely crazy. But, one, I'm used to working from home, so that's a positive, but it's been tough. There's no question about it. Mike, I wish I would have taken your advice a little bit, and that is to stay off of Facebook and watch a little bit less of the news. I found myself wanting to throw something at my brand new 65-inch television a couple of days ago, but it's been a slog.
We probably shouldn't share the full advice I gave you, but I decided that, when the Russians and my father got on Facebook, it was time to get off. And I don't seem to be gaining any sort of knowledge from cable news. So to me, the New York Times coronavirus newsletter seems to have everything you need to know.
I've been a Bloomberg guy. I've been really on Bloomberg. I'm getting a lot of, I feel like I get a lot of news, but I also get a lot of the stories in terms of how it's going to affect the economy in a number of ways. You know, I also have been sitting and listening to a number of podcasts from economists, and sometimes they're really kind of dry, but other times they've been kind of interesting.
Gotcha. So I'm going to turn it over to one of you guys. What do you want to talk about?
First of all, Neil, you got to stop watching the news. The only time I turn on the news is to hear your governor. Now that I know WWE is a sanctioned event, or what's the term he used? They passed the bill. That
essential. Says, it's an essential, yeah, essential event.
Business. If you guys didn't know, if you need your backyard wrestling, wrestling as they call it down there, just go to Florida.
Well, don't get me started, JP. I mean,
I'm poking the bear.
Our governor down here has made, you know, Florida look like Florida, as in D-U-H at the end. He has just made, in my opinion, and along with many of my friends' opinions and neighbors, he has made a lot of boneheaded decisions. I mean, you know, starting with leaving the beaches open and all of those, you know, kids. And then, you know, I saw what they call footfall traffic from that. And all of those kids ended up in what looks like all of the major hotspots right now for coronavirus activity. So, you know, I don't understand what he's thinking, what he's, you know, or what he's using in terms of numbers to make his decisions. But that WWE decision really had a lot of us really shaking our heads on Tuesday night.
JP, I actually have to give Neil props with the Florida. That was if we need to mark that for the sound engineer to lay in a rim shot. But
Neil, what else are you looking at other than, you know, crazy news stories? What's on your mind this week?
Well, you know, I've been trying to look at what the new normal is going to look like, and I'm almost starting to hate that expression already, but one of the things that caught my eye, there was actually two things and they were related to one another. Number one is that the PGA Tour, it looks like, will be the first professional sport to try to get back going. And while Jay Monahan, I guess he's the CEO of the, or commissioner, excuse me, of the PGA Tour, you know, he said it is in pencil, but right now they're planning to come back with the first event from June 11th to the 14th. At Colonial in Texas, in Fort Worth. And for the first four events, they're talking about no gallery, no fans will be allowed on the course. And then in the middle of July, there would be allowing fans to start coming back to the course. Now, I don't know if this is the right thing or the wrong thing, but I do know that the more people that I talk to, the more I realize that sports are such an ingrained fabric to our day-to-day lives, that, you know, people seem to really be missing it. So, you know, the PGA Tour, it looks like, will be the first of, and wrestling, of course, WWE notwithstanding. But just to tie into something, last night something caught my eye that really kind of made me laugh. And the article started out as a priest, a rabbi, and a yogi stand 6 feet apart from each other on a tee box. Now, to me, that sounds like a joke where a priest, a rabbi, and a yogi, you know, go into a bar to have a beer. The article, though, was about playing golf during a pandemic might be safe, but is it right? And people were talking about the moral implications of, you know, participating in an activity like golf during a pandemic. It was really interesting to see the different viewpoints.
And what is yours?
You know, I'm, it's funny. I mean, I don't want to necessarily kind of line up stereotypes, but the priest, you know, kind of gave a little bit of a guilt trip that, you know, while everybody's suffering, people shouldn't be able to, you know, people should think twice about doing something like that that's really enjoyable. The rabbi kind of went the other direction and said, you know, that if the opportunity presents itself, you know, that he didn't see a problem with it. But the interesting one, the yogi. Now, the yogi said that right now there is so much negativity, so much unhappiness, so much depression, you know, in terms of the way people feel, that if golf makes you feel happy, makes you feel good, you'll be able to transfer those feelings to those people that are around you. So he said, you know what? Playing golf makes you happy, that makes you part of the solution and not part of the problem. It was really an interesting article. It was on golfdigest.com. If you want to see it, it's titled "Playing Golf During a Pandemic Might Be Safe, But Is It Right?"
This is also a masterclass in how to not answer a question. What is your status here? Are you
I would love to be able to play golf, but we can't. I mean, the mayor of Palm Beach County basically put the whole kind of kibosh on that. No public or private golf courses are allowed to be open. Even if they practice social distancing rules and CDC requirements, there's no golf. I'd love it to be, but there isn't.
Well, at the very least, if JP and I were there to play a round of golf with you, Neil, there'd be guaranteed social distancing because neither of us would keep our ball on the fairway.
So I have to be looking for the ball all day. So, you know, when he went made.
Last time Neil saw me swing a golf club, I believe it was 2 years ago at the PGA show. He saw a beautiful, beautiful swing.
John actually had a pretty athletic swing. You know, a couple of lessons, JP, and you'd be ready to go.
First time I've ever picked up that's not true. Probably like the third time I've ever swung a golf club. It was pretty bad.
So how about you, JP? What's catching your eye during the crisis?
Before we move on, though, can we just discuss how would JP play golf as he has to cart an umbrella with him due to his delicate skin?
Well, they have sunblock, Mike. I mean, you know, put like SP 56 on him or something like that.
I think he's going with the Asian umbrella joke, which I
see.
I totally own. Because I hate walking in the sun. But this one's full circle for me, guys. For the three people that are still listening, they'll find out from this podcast that I worked at, when I used to have a real job, I worked at Outback Steakhouse for over five years. That was actually one of my very first jobs in high school and then college. But the CEO of Bloomin' Brands, they own a bunch of chains, including Outback Steakhouse, came out yesterday and said he is not furloughing a single employee. He is also paying every employee, and that includes servers and the wait staff and the other part-time employees. The board and the CEO suspended all pay. So they're all making $0. I just thought this was so interesting and kudos to these guys. I mean, too many times I keep reading during this time, CEOs and management teams saying, you know, they don't have the money and all this stuff. And then here we are, you know, Bloomin' Brands, which I think their sales are at, were down 50 or 60% to date. And they're still able to extend their cash and their credit revolver to do something like this. And the quote, I believe I might screw it up unless I can find it really quickly. But the quote essentially said from the CEO, David Dino, basically, our priorities have shifted and now taking care of our people. What do you guys think of this? And what do you guys also think of, you know, CEOs all too often, you know, referring to the fiduciary duty kind of excuse of, you know, their shareholders versus people. This is what we're talking about. Any thoughts?
Well, I think Mitt Romney made it clear in the 2012 election that corporations are people, but no, I'm kidding. I mean, I think that's what a servant leader is, right? That's the, you know, doing what they can to take care of their people. And, you know, with 22 million people having filed, you know, jobless claims in the last 4 weeks, I was talking to a retailer in our industry, said that most of his salespeople and the sales management teams for many of the wholesale partners that they have are basically furloughed until like July.
It's crazy.
It's an interesting situation. I get an email every morning from Morning Consult is the name of the organization. And there was piece in there this morning that in particular, millennials and Gen Z age consumers will feel as though they will reward those companies that have been good to their employees and been good kind of corporate citizens, you know, once the crisis is over, with loyalty and their business. And I think we talked about that in a previous, previous podcast about that.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, you're kind of a combination of both of your stories. I saw Matt Powell's newsletter that he regularly sends out, and it sounded like sneakers kind of took a big hit early on, but maybe stabilizing a bit. Is that what you guys are seeing or hearing?
It may have stabilized a little bit, but you know, you're not looking at a V here. We're looking at probably a U or maybe even a W coming back. I think it's going to, stay. 30% of Americans have indicated that, they are reevaluating their entire purchase decisions. And, that means the consumer discretionary, of which sneakers are, will people going to evaluate, do I need an extra pair of shoes? Do I need an extra pair of those pants? Do I need another pair of jeans? And I think that, for a while you're going to see, sneakers kind of, lag maybe behind some other categories.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen too much other than Nike's earnings, which we didn't really even talk about, but they more or less crushed it in their direct sales. I mean, anyway, but back to your point, Mike, I think on the discretionary spend, guys, I got to tell you, I might be the newest Peloton fanboy. I tried their app and they extended it for 90 days and it's a wonderful workout. I got to say, I've been doing the yoga guided workouts and, I'm way too cheap to ever buy a bike. Let me be clear. But what's been interesting is I saw a stat the other day that said the Peloton, and it showed the Google search trends, the only thing even remotely close to matching online grocery searching on Google is Peloton. Just literally a spike straight up. And obviously Nautilus reported the other day and they saw a huge surge in direct orders. I'm really interested when this is all clear, if people are going to rush back to the gyms like everybody thinks.
Just a couple of observations, because you both know that I've been raving about the Peloton bike for a while because we had one in our gym at the office that we can no longer go to. And I think in the last, 3 to 4 weeks, I've seen the Peloton van cruising around Capitol Hill, making, quite a few house calls. And then this will show you how pathetic I am. I'm going to shill for a Peloton bike should somebody at Peloton actually listen. But I was walking our recycling out and noticed a Peloton bike in a window with nobody riding on it. And it just really aggravated me.
My daughter, Melissa, who lives in Manhattan and was also an Equinox member, she has had been an Equinox gym member for quite some time. She bought a Peloton bike. It was delivered approximately like at the end of March, March 31st. She put it together. She absolutely loves it. And she has also set me up as an additional profile. At some point I am going to do, just like you said, John, the guided yoga or some of the other exercises in there. But she says she's basically done with Equinox. And, once her membership runs out, she says she probably will not renew.
Whoa. I wish I was a part of the Schwartz household. Equinox memberships? You're talking $200 a month?
What is Melissa, folks. That's my daughter, Melissa.
Hey, Neil, Peloton released their new iOS Facebook feature where you can now work out with your friends. So whenever you want to get that yoga workout in, my friend, I'll have the man bun ready.
Okay. I'll be dressed in front of my iPad and ready to go.
Power yoga with Pooba. I can't wait.
At the risk of us not having any listeners left for the interview with Curtis, why don't we get to that interview with Curtis from Innovative Fitness?
All right. Today we have Curtis Christofferson from Innovative Fitness, the founder and CEO. Curtis, what's going on?
Oh, not much, man. Just plugging away as always.
Thanks for joining us during what's a crazy time for your business, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, COVID-19 is challenging for a lot of people, but you know, for us in the fitness space, it hit us hard for sure.
Absolutely. No, it's definitely understandable. And you are headquartered out of Vancouver. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Vancouver, British Columbia.
I brought along my resident Canadian buddy, Joel Den Engelsen, to co-host this episode. Joel, what's going on?
Hey, man. How you guys doing?
Great. Good, man.
So, yeah, Jay brought me in on this. And I got to say, it's nice to have another buddy just south of me. I'm up in Squamish. So, pleasure to meet you, Curtis.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Next time we'll bring all of our new friend Jeff Mangus, since it's a Canadian Love Fest here. But until then, I'd love to dive into it, man. First of all, what is Innovative Fitness? Tell our listeners.
Yeah, so we're a premium personal training company. We have 12 locations, so high-end boutique personal training, over 250 trainers that span anywhere from Vancouver to Toronto. So a Canadian-based company, been around for 25 years, and essentially we service high-level executives, CEOs, business professionals, and people that want to, you know, take their performance to the next level. So, you know, we don't train as much as we train athletes or celebrities in Canada. You know, the only athletes that we have that make money are hockey players, and usually they're on the road. And when you're some sort of celebrity, you're moving down to LA or New York. So at the end of the day, we cater and help people with their health to take their health to the next level and work with them 2 to 3 times a week usually.
Got it. And so that's kind of an interesting niche there, what you just said about the hockey players versus the masses. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your perspective on the wellness market? People say it's $4 trillion. I don't know if I believe that, but any thoughts just on the general macro trends?
Yeah, obviously it's growing. So, you know, you look at the generations that are, you know, the consumers of today, they grew up with health and wellness as a priority in their life, whether it's sports, whether it's just health. And so, you know, obviously the health and wellness market is growing rapidly. It's obviously important. And then you get the baby boomer generation that is now retiring and understanding that they want to live longer. So they're adopting health and wellness in a completely different way than obviously the generations coming in as consumers. And so, you know, it's a really unique time. There's like a convergence of everybody's interest and prioritizing health and wellness in their lives.
And how do you guys, can you speak a little bit more to that, the convergence there? You have, you know, Gen Z millennials, but obviously I think the stat I read was, you know, 10,000 people are going to retire every week for the next 10 years or 5 years. I forget the stat, but how are you addressing both cohorts there?
Well, I think we always say that people either want to look better, perform better, or live longer. And there's, you know, people are motivated usually by fear and greed, right? So if you look at, you know, people that the baby boomers, as an example, that are retiring, you know, their major motivation is either to be around and spend time, quality time with their grandkids, as an example, or live longer to extend the length of how long they live. And so, you know, catering to that, you know, obviously any generation, what's great about our business model is that it's personalized. So it depends on doesn't matter what your goals, needs, abilities, injury history is. Like at the end of the day, we have a personalized approach. We work one-on-one with people based on their needs and what they're looking for. And we can customize a program, whatever they want. So
that's awesome. I think the coolest thing so far after researching, speaking with people and yourself, obviously about Innovative, is you guys are almost this legacy company in terms of how long you've been around, but you are able to pivot and be very nimble like a startup. So speaking of pivoting, I mean, let's just address the elephant, COVID. Tell us how you transformed your business digitally. And Joel, I want you to chime in here too with your digital background as well. But Curtis, any thoughts on what you guys did? I think it was 5 days your post said.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a series of events that everybody's gone through. And I remember the dates like it was, you know, yesterday, even though it seems like it was a year ago. And maybe I can go back and tell you about that. So Wednesday, March 11th, was a really critical and pivotal day. I think for a lot of people, the 11th and the 12th really meant a lot, especially in the business world. So on the 11th, you know, I can tell you that I was the one waving the flag in our business saying, you know, if there's someone that could stay open the longest in the health and fitness and the service-based business model, it would be us. We work one-on-one with all of our clients. We know their history, where they've been, where they've traveled. You know, we're not a group class drop-in model. So, you know, we control our spaces quite strongly. And so I remember sitting with our executive team going, hey, you know what? We got to prep and plan for this. But the reality is that we're going to be able to control possibly the environment a lot more and a lot longer than anybody else. And then if everybody recalls, on Wednesday the 11th, Trump grounded the planes to Europe. The NBA had their first initial case. And then Thursday morning, NBA, NHL, Disneyland, all canceled either their seasons or their business, closed their business. And hysteria just went through the roof. And so at that point on Thursday the 12th, we had to make some major decisions. And we said, hey, you know what, we gotta figure out our stance on this and what we're gonna do. And so originally our thought was, you know, we were gonna lean into our value system and say, hey, you know what, if we've always been that legacy and leader in this space, we've been around for 25 years, we pride ourselves on the communities that we build, both in our four walls and outside our four walls, that we got to take a stance, and we got to take a leadership stance of flattening the curve. So we got with our leadership team and said, hey, you know what? It's not mandated. It's not forced. No one's even discussed this, and no one's even decided to close their doors, but we're going to take a stance. We're going to participate and flatten the curve, and we're going to close our doors. Our last day is going to be March 20th, Friday, March 20th. And then what happened was on Sunday, prior to us obviously communicating this to anybody, our clients or our teammates, Sunday I got a phone call from a region that's relatively close to some of our locations. And, you know, I got told that 4 out of 12 guys that went on a trip to Austria for a ski trip tested positive for COVID. And they weren't involved or in our locations. But I said to myself that this is way too close to home. And the last thing we wanted to do is be a part of the problem and not part of the solution. So, you know, at that point we made a decision and said, hey, we can't jeopardize the health of our teammates, our clients, our communities, the healthcare system. And we for sure don't want to be in the news for having a breakout in one of our locations. So on Sunday the 15th, we said, we're going to call it. And, you know, I remember that, like, there was no other fitness companies around locally that I know of, in particular in Vancouver and Toronto, that had made any of those decisions yet. And so we had to get on a phone call with some of our franchise partners, which we have some, to our teammates and tell them our stance. And there was, you know, there was a little bit of backlash, like difference of opinions, didn't think it was that bad, didn't think why would we close down our stores and our studios if we didn't have to. And, you know, sure enough, you know, after that, you know, we saw that next week, the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, everybody followed suit. So, you know, kind of pride ourselves on making that decision. We got a lot of positive praise from our clients and really the stance that we were taking. And it was gut-wrenching, right? Like, you know, some people have told us, you know, so what was it like? Are you kind of, you know, your revenue's going down? It's like the minute we closed our doors is the minute that we stood on top of the cliff. Like, that's just a reality. So, you know, we went from, you know, having one of our best years yet to then having zero revenue the day that we decided to close our doors. And then that went into an entire pivot strategy. Actually, it went into a conversation before it went to the pivot strategy. And before jumping in there, I, you know, kind of taking the mic right now, but, you know, three things I looked at: crisis management. Number one, we're all going through it. So COVID-19, you know, is a crisis. And so we are actually evaluating, you know, how we respond to this as individuals, as families, as organizations, or as communities. So, you know, and we have to respond to it in some way. So crisis management is one bucket. Risk mitigation as a business owner is the second bucket. How can we mitigate risk as much as possible? So when I talk about mitigate risk, one of them is making the choice to close down so that we don't spread the disease or the virus, you know, is one way to do that. And obviously the other way to do that is obviously, you know, from a business standpoint, how do we cut our costs? So we had to, you know, we had already got ahead of that, sent letters to our finance partners, to our the banks, as well as our landlords. And we had to mitigate as much risk as possible so we could, you know, we could stay in business for as long as possible. And then the last one was, do we want to adapt or do we not? And that is the big one, I think, that we're seeing in the fitness space. You know, it's, do we want to adapt or do we want to shut the doors, turn off the lights, let this thing blow through and hopefully reopen, which we had the choice to do. And we still have the choice to do. But when we evaluated it, we said, you know, for 25 years, we've built strong communities. We've delivered a product and a service that we feel is a priority in many people's lives. We feel it's beneficial in many people's lives. Obviously, health and wellness, if there's a time you need it now. And could we provide that service to people in their homes? And we wanted to do what the right thing was to do. And if you look at our value system, like some of our values, we challenge status quo. We find a way, no excuse. We build strong communities. All these things, when we lean into it, it said, no, we're not closing our doors. We're not making excuses. We haven't done it for 25 years. We're not going to start now. So we decided to adapt and pivot. And in under 5 days, we reinvented our business. So it's kind of where we're at.
Oh, wow, Curtis, that is absolutely incredible. You said you turned the whole thing around from physical to digital in 5 days.
Yeah.
That is incredible. In a past life, I worked with, you know, any number of Fortune 500s around the world, and everybody had the same mindset. It was all about, you know, digital transformation, you know, retail's dying, our physical stores are closing. And I don't think one of them ever got digital transformation inside of, you know, 18 to 24 months. And it's just incredible. You guys, you know, you're a small, agile company. You've also been around for 25 years. So it's not like you're an upstart with three people.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. Could you walk us through sort of those 5 days, what they look like for you and your team?
Yeah, for sure. So Sunday the 15th is the day that I got on a Zoom meeting with all of our employees across the company. Over 250 trainers that we have, and let them know that we were going to be paying their salary for the entire week. We're closing our doors, paying their salaries and their compensation the entire week. And that allowed us time. Like, out of anything, it just said, hey, we're not scrambling. We're putting a plan together. We're going to buy some time. And when we buy some time, we're going to provide you the opportunity to take care of yourselves. So we actually provided resources to them, like what they should be doing, how they should be taking care of themselves, whether it's rent, mortgages, talking to their banks, getting groceries, stocking up on things, because we knew that this thing was coming fast. So that was the first thing that we did. The second thing we did is we took our executive team and broke it up into working groups. And we evaluated, the first thing we had to evaluate is, what does this look like, right? What does a pivot strategy look like, or a successful one? And we broke it down to six fundamental things. The first one, let's re-identify our target audience. Who is our current target audience? Does that shift and change because of this? And what is the behaviors attached to that target audience that we service? Because things are going to shift and change in terms of their routine, their behaviors, their reaction to this, you name it. The next four out of the six are the four P's of marketing. So if you're familiar with marketing, you know, I'll put it in this order because this is the order that we put it in. Product, place, price, promotion. Does our product have to change? And we said to ourselves after evaluating it, it does not have to change. So, you know, our actual fundamental of our product does not have to change. But the second P of marketing, which is our third point, was place. If we're a physical, we're in physical brick and mortar spaces. We provide services one-on-one. So obviously we couldn't do that. I mean, social distancing and isolation cannot make that possible. So our distribution had to change. So our place obviously had to change. The third one is price. How price sensitive are people going to be? How are they going to prioritize this? What does that look like? Do we charge? Do we not charge? How do we promote it? So that's the fourth P. And our fifth item that we talked about, you know, promotion is funny in this day and age, especially with COVID. Like, when people are under a lot of stress, how they react to that stress is going to be different. And how we show up in the world and how we communicate to our consumer is going to be, you know, is going to be a challenge, or it's going to be something we have to consider anyways. And then the last one is speed. How fast should we move and how fast do we need to move? And so those six things, we looked at it and go, okay, we got to put everything in place. And so that was kind of our guiding principle. Like, our values is what we actually made decisions based on. These were just like, okay, what is the, you know, the six fundamentals we have to pay attention to as we determine what our next 5 days look like. And so what we looked at is, we looked at, you know, target audience. I talked about this, behaviors. What are people going to need? What are they, you know, and the last one was speed. You know, what are they going to need first? And so our first, you know, question was, what is the behaviors of people? So when they, you know, socially distance themselves or create new routines, or the kids aren't in school, it's not fitness. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs comes up first, right? Shelter, safety, health, you know, all Maslow's hierarchy of needs are going to be the first top of topic that they're going to think about, or top of mind, naturally, subconsciously, like, it's survival mode. And, you know, one of those main ones is people have to eat. And so we thought that sleep, diet, then fitness are going to be the in priority of what they're going to look at. They're going to need sleep to manage their stress. They're going to, you know, they have to eat. So their diet is, you know, is going to change. It's going to be super important. And fitness, as much as we want to prioritize it, that will probably be, you know, third on the food chain. And so we said to ourselves, let's launch nutritional coaching and health coaching, you know, and we were already 90% done of developing a platform with our boys at Precision Nutrition. So we quickly rushed to launch that because we were one, already close to launching it, and two, we thought it was a priority. So that's the first thing that we did. The second thing we did is we created a working group of you know, literally building out our plan to deliver our personal training product in home. So the distribution model on that, around that. So that was another working group. The third one was, how do we keep our community connected? And so we use this platform called Facebook, which everybody should be familiar with. And we use that as a private Facebook community to, you know, create motivation and positivity and support. And we created a group called the Beat the Bug Fitness Community, where everybody's going to band together and beat the bug together. And so we did that. And then the last one was, we created, this was actually the first one. We created a gift card / a top-up package renewal option so that we could go to our customer base and say, hey, you know what? Like, if you're here to support local, you know, feel free to buy gift cards, you name it, so that we can get revenue in the door. So those four things, you know, is what we looked at, and then we rolled it out after that. So
as you fantastic. Speak about promotion, you're promoting immunity, right?
Yeah.
And with that promotion, you clearly, before COVID, had a clientele, as you described. It'd be great if you would describe that clientele. And then the follow-up question to that would be, you know, in many ways, this presents an opportunity for those folks to be promoters beyond just word of mouth, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of the question, you know, our clientele, executive CEOs, business professionals, stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home dads, people that are looking to perform better or live longer in their life, and want to outsource their health to professionals like us. Like that's what they do. The world has come to a place where people, if you can afford it, like to outsource things because, you know, we've never been more stressed and have had less time. And so what we do is we find the gardener. It's not just about the accountant or the dentist or the, you know, the lawyer anymore. It's about the gardener. It's about the chef. It's about cooking. It's about, you know, whatever it might be. And fitness is one of them. And so we became a staple in a lot of people's lives. You know, they would outsource their health to us. They came to us 3 days a week, and we would be essentially, they didn't have to think about it. They would come to us, we would train them, and we were that lifestyle management solution. And so we kind of told ourselves that whether it's COVID or not, why does that have to change? Obviously people are worried about money, financial security, stability, items like that. But if anything, they shouldn't give up. They should probably give up the gardener before they give up their health. And so, you know, with us, we're fortunate that a lot of our business comes from word of mouth because everybody knows another person that probably either has similar interests, wants to perform better, wants to live longer, live in a certain geographical region that have the same level of affluence. And now, you know, post COVID, now that we're delivering this product in home to home, which I can talk about, you know, we're getting a lot of people that are, you know, shocked and surprised that they're working with a trainer in their house. You know, it's like, how is that possible? Because the fitness community and the wellness community, the average pivot or, you know, how they adapted to this, I'm not going to name any organizational names, but they didn't, right? There's some large organizations in the fitness and wellness space that said, we don't know what this looks like day to day. We don't know what this looks like week to week. So all we're going to do is we're going to shut our doors and we're going to stream, you know, live free content to keep our community intact and give a solution. Nothing wrong with that, right? There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But to, you know, in our eyes,
until one of your Peloton instructors actually gets sick.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing. It's the reality is we looked at it kind of going, at the end of the day, all the streaming services out there, whether it's paid or free, whether it's on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, Instagram Live, you name it, A, it's a bloodbath. So there is so much noise in that space right now. Every independent trainer, every organization is providing some sort of free content that's delivered to the home. But that existed before COVID. right? There's something called Beachbody Live. There was Insanity. There was P90X. There was, you know, DVDs. Like, and our consumer had that choice to begin with. And so if they didn't choose that to begin with, why did they choose us pre-COVID anyways? It's because it was the coaching, the accountability, the personalization, the face-to-face contact. So if they chose us for those reasons before COVID, they would definitely choose that solution after. And so now what's funny is that as much as we're not in physical, you know, contact with people, we're virtually in contact with people. And even that alone is from a mindset is really, you know, fulfilling. It's fulfilling for people because they're not just looking at their spouse or their kids or dealing with what's at home. They're interacting with someone that is also coaching them with, you know, around their health, you know, in their home. And so anyways, long story short, we did this pivot in 5 days, and the one that took the most was the product that we delivered the most, which was, you know, 95% of our revenue, which was the personal training. Like, how did we do that? I mean, launching gift cards, launching, you know, nutritional coaching, there is some complexity to that. Launching a Facebook community, that's not that difficult in today's world. But launching our personal training, it was quite intense. So it's, you know, it took a lot of work in a short period of time, and we've been able to do it. So.
Hey, Curtis, maybe we'll get you all out of here with one last question, kind of looking forward. I think this is on everyone's mind, and you know, I have to say, just as a side note, serious kudos to you guys. I mean, you can hear the community and passion bleed through your voice, and very similar to our last interview with George Foreman and Everybody Fights. I see a lot of similarities between both your brands and how you built your communities. And just to remind listeners, there's an ongoing lawsuit right now with Town Sports International, who are still charging their gym, you know, their gym members. And so I think I just want to reiterate how tough of a decision that had to have been. And I'm sure it's going to reap large rewards down the road for you guys. But kind of going forward, you talked about psychology before we hopped on. How do you view this as people getting back in the gym when this is all over? Is there going to be a lag time? Is there going to be delays? And related, the virtual fitness concept, both are going to be okay. Brick and mortar and virtual is going to work together in the future, presumably, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's a couple of great questions. So number one, this is our behaviors are going to be forever changed. How we interact with people, how we consume things, how we, you know, everything. Like, you know, we thought 9/11 was impactful in the way we fly, the way the security, you know, and other industries associated with that were impacted by 9/11. This is impacting human behavior to a very high level, and how we interact and how we behave and when we're ready to, you know, socialize as an example. And it's not going to be a V. Like, our anticipation, or my anticipation, it's not like, oh yeah, the health authorities say, yeah, you can open up for business, and then there's going to be a line out of the door. Like, everybody's going to deal with this differently. And I think there's going to be some people that are going to be ready to connect with other human beings. And there's going to be a lag for other people and understanding how they, you know, what they want to do and how they interact with people. And so there is going to be a lag, and that doesn't even, you know, include the fact that there's going to be some, you know, secondary and tertiary waves of COVID, right? That it's probably not going to be, you know, this is going to, you know, swoop through and then we're going to be, you know, in the clear. Like, it's going to, there's going to be secondary and tertiary waves that are going to come through that are going to impact us again. In terms of overall, you know, the actual training service, you know, worst case scenario, we believe that this is a new revenue stream. And if I can give any business owner, you know, some perspective, I mean, people always told me that I had to have other revenue streams. And I said, nah, we don't have to have other ways to generate revenue. I mean, we're always going to be, human beings are always going to interact with each other. And you know, that's never going away. And when 98% of your revenue is delivered face to face, and then you can't do that anymore, it begs a question that I should have diversified earlier. That being said, we have now. And if you look at the solution that we have, how does it fit into our model? Well, I'll tell you certain ways. Number one, we have a community that travels. And whether you live on the East Coast or you live on the West Coast, a lot of our clients go down to Palm Springs or Phoenix for 2 to 3 months on the West Coast, or they go down to Florida on the East Coast, and they have secondary homes. And so when they leave and they come off our schedule, we're not servicing that client for 2, 3, 4 months. And so now they can stay connected with their trainer 2 or 3 days a week and stay connected to not only their trainer, but to their health and wellness while they're on the road. Same goes with corporate travel. You know, no different than when someone's traveling on the road. Now they can stay connected with their coach and stay connected with their fitness so that that's not put on the back burner. And then the other, you know, target audience is a great example is the stay-at-home moms. You know, we've never got into the childcare model. Like we just, that wasn't something that we wanted to play ball. And so we didn't, it takes up physical space. There's complications with it. There's a responsibility with it and licensing with it. And so we said, hey, you know, we're never going to get in this space. And we cut off the opportunity to service people that, you know, had young kids at home. And now, you know, we can service people in their home where they might not have nannies or any kind of support network to let them, you know, get in, you know, get outside their home and come to our workout. So there is solutions. I think it's here to stay. I think that's what's great is that now we have different revenue streams. We can service our existing clients or service, you know, a completely new audience. And I'm excited by that. And then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it sounds like you're a silver linings type of guy. And it's going to be awesome to kind of see the reaction of your community. I'm sure there's been positive outpouring support to date. And, you know, would love to keep this discussion going, Curtis, and have you back on to kind of talk about 6 months after COVID or 4 months or whenever that might be.
For sure.
Yeah. I can't wait to turn my kid into a 30-pound kettlebell.
I have a 115-pound lab I've been using the last couple of weeks. It's fantastic. I think he's tired of it, but I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I haven't worked out at all, so there we go. But hey, Curtis, CEO, founder of Innovative Fitness, thank you so much for taking some time, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, play hard or at least look good doing it.